Swami Nikhilanand is a disciple of Jagat Guru Sri Kripaluji Maharaj. He resides at Radha Madhav Dham in Austin, Texas, which is the U.S. ashram of Jagat Guru Kripalu Parishad. He travels America preaching the philosophy of Sanatan Dharma as taught by Sri Kripaluji Maharaj. In this series, Swami Nikhilanand tells the Sri Krishna Leelas of the Bhagavatam from his appearance and birthday celebration in Gokul up until Govardhan Leela when he was 7 years of age. In addition, he explains the effect of listening to Sri Krishna Leelas and how meditating on the Leelas is an important part of the path of bhakti.
I've been describing the Krishna Leelas of the Bhagavatam to you all this week. A Leela is any action of God. Our actions are called karma, and God's actions are called Leela. And the difference is not in the physical action. A Leela may be the exact same on the outside, what it appears to be, as a karma. In other words, Krishna may have done many of the things that we do in our everyday life. He ate, he slept, he played with his friends. He did all of these things, yet when he does it, it's a Leela, and when we do it, it's karma. So what's the difference? What's inside? What do we have inside? Maya. What does Krishna have inside? Yoga Maya. That's the difference. I spoke to you about Yoga Maya, that is Krishna's most personal power. And it is through that Yoga Maya Shakti that he performs all of the amazing actions that he does, whether they are almighty actions like creating the universe, or loving actions like the Leelas we've been hearing about in the Bhagavatam. All of these Leelas are made possible and performed through Yoga Maya. And all of our actions are because of Maya. We are under Maya. Our mind is under Maya. In fact, our mind is made of Maya. So all of our thoughts are mayic. All of our emotions are mayic. Add to this that Krishna has no desires. That's another internal difference. Our desires are what impel us to perform any action. Because we have a desire to attain something, we decide to do any particular action. That's why it is called karma. Karma are those actions performed by souls like us who are under Maya, and in here we have all our own personal desires. And depending on what those desires are, then we perform our actions. And then those karma are judged by God according to what our desire was. That was it tamas? Was our desire to harm someone else and that's why we did that? Karma, okay, that's a tamas karma. It's classified. It wasn't done to harm anyone. It was just a selfish personal action, rajas karma. And it was done to help someone else, sattvic karma. And it was done with a desire to attain God. We call that super sattvic karma or devotional karma. So four classifications of actions, each with their own result. Tamas karma results in suffering now and in our next life. Now, because we get the result inside immediately, it pollutes our heart, it causes more strain and tension in our mind. Rajas karma creates more worldly attachment, which also leads to more suffering in the future. Sattvic karma, we are rewarded for. Both now, because it gives us peace of mind to do sattvic karma, and we're rewarded in the future with some kind of good destiny in any future incarnation. Devotional karma, that fructifies immediately. You get heart purification by doing devotional karma. Devotional karma means doing bhakti, like meditating on Krishna's leelas, chanting his name. The effort you made to come here to the mandir tonight was also part of your bhakti. Even though while you were driving the car, maybe you were thinking about, you know, the traffic and where you had to turn and all of those things, but your udeshya was in there. Krishna knew the motivation for his driving the car is to go to the mandir and listen to my leelas. So that also counted as bhakti. So all of those devotional actions, anything that we do with the aim of God realization, that all purifies the heart and takes us closer to God realization. All of these are karma, but nothing Krishna does is karma because it can't be classified as good or bad or devotional. It's all divine because he doesn't have any personal desire motivating him to do anything. He is Atma Ram Purnakam. He's, how does he feel inside? Complete, at peace. Completely happy in and of himself. He doesn't need to look outwardly for anything. He doesn't need any input through his senses like we do to try to feel happy. Just on the inside, he's already perfectly happy. So then why would he perform any karma? He would have no personal reason to do anything. He can just sit and enjoy his divine bliss and never do anything. So if he does anything, it's only for one reason. That's to grace the souls. And that's different than one of us doing a sattvic karma to try to help another person. God's trying to help someone is in a totally different class. Because what can we do? We can give someone food if he's hungry. We can give someone a place to stay if he doesn't have a house. We can give someone money if he needs medical care or education. These are all temporary, material, physical things. Krishna has a power of grace, his kripa shakti, through which he can actually affect you on the inside. So he tries to grace souls on the inside by giving them bhakti, giving them prerana to come towards him, helping them to purify their heart, providing opportunities for them to learn the spiritual knowledge or hear about him, learn about the path to attain him. He provides all of these opportunities. He makes sure you're in the right place at the right time to find out about it. He tries to give you, according to your past devotions that you've done, the right sanskar at the right time, meaning from inside you feel some kind of urge to go to satsang or hear about Krishna Leelas. Why is that urge there? Because you did some devotion in your last life and now Krishna is giving you the result of that on the inside. It's called a sanskar. It comes up, reflects back into your conscious mind and you just feel, oh, I should go to the mandir. He is doing all of that for us and that is his kripa. It's much, much more than an ordinary soul like us can ever do to help another soul. But Krishna, he's doing all of this. And his every action is called Leela, which means that it is done through Yoga Maya, and it is never done for his own personal desire. It is always done to grace either ordinary souls or saints, God-realized souls. So Krishna's gracious actions are called Leelas. Yesterday we finished with the Kalyanag Leela and I told you that after that long Leela, everybody was exhausted. And all those Brajwasis, they were too tired to walk back to their homes, so they all decided, let's spend the night here under the stars with Krishna. We'll sleep on the bank of Yamuna. Now there's no more Kalyanag to worry about, no more poison in the Yamuna. So let's enjoy the night here with Krishna. So they all went to sleep on the bank of Yamuna. Gwalbals, Yashoda, Nanda Baba, the older gopis, everyone was there. In the middle of the night, a wildfire started. And that wildfire started coming closer on one side, then on another side, then it had them surrounded. So all of them woke up and they all came running to Krishna. And they said, Krishna, Krishna, look, this fire is coming. It's about to turn us all into ashes. Do something, please. We are in your care. We are in your shelter. So Krishna just looked at the fire that was approaching and had them all surrounded, and he just inhaled. And as he inhaled, that fire just went into his mouth and disappeared. And then they were all fine. So there's just a very brief description of that lila at this part of the description in the Bhagavatam. Then we get to the description of in Sri Krishna's sixth year, as we've been hearing about, the description of Grishma Ritu, the hot season. It says that in Vrindavan, in that forest of Vrindavan, even though it was Grishma Ritu, which is generally a very difficult, a very physically challenging season for all living beings, it's so hot, so dry, there's like no relief for weeks and weeks on end. But because of the presence of Krishna and Balaram there in Vrindavan, it always felt like Vasant Ritu. It felt like the spring, even though it was the middle of the hot season. So there in the forest, amongst the hills, whereas in Grishma Ritu, normally all the little creeks would dry up. Coming down the hill in the little gullies, there would be no water normally. But in this Grishma Ritu, with the grace of Shri Krishna, even those little gullies were full of water that was running down and making, you know, the sound water makes when it falls down. So the forest had that sound. And then there were the cicadas, who are normally up in the trees on the hot days, making their buzzing sound. So they would all hide in behind those little waterfalls to stay cool, and they'd make their buzzing sound from behind there. Whereas Yamuna and the other rivers during Grishma Ritu, they would, you know, become much smaller. But in this hot season, Yamuna Ji was full right up to her banks. And the big waves that would be there, they would always, every day, be washing up high on the sandy banks of Yamuna, keeping the banks clean. And not only that, but the spray from those waves and the spray from those little waterfalls coming down through the hills created a mist. And that mist would just get blown here and there by the breeze. So it kept everything in the whole area green. All the grass on the bank of Yamuna was green, whereas normally in Grishma Ritu, that would become totally dried up and brown. The forest would become dried up. But all the trees stayed green, all the grass stayed green. The trees were completely laden with flowers, just like they would be in Vasant Ritu. With all the flowers included in those flowers, there was all the lotus flowers growing in the little streams, in the ponds, in the bigger ponds, in the quiet bays of Yamuna. And when that breeze would blow, it would pick up the mist from the waves of Yamuna and also from those streams running through the forest. So it would be a little bit moist with that, and cool also, and it would also pick up the fragrance from all the flowers. So it means all the beings there in Vrindavan, they had no suffering whatsoever during the summer. They just felt like with that cool breeze blowing, carrying the scent of all the flowers, they just easily passed those months. And Shri Krishna and his friends, they kept grazing the cows all throughout this Grishma Ritu. And there's a beautiful description of how they would head out and they would find all different kinds and colors of feathers and, you know, put it in their headband here or, you know, in their waistband there. They would decorate themselves with feathers with different colors and kinds of leaves and flowers. So they were, you know, finding different things in the forest to decorate themselves with. They would find different types and colors of clay, like red clay, gray clay, yellow clay, and then they'd decorate their arms and their faces and their legs and everything. And then they played. Six-year-old Krishna played with Balaram and all of his friends every day. So some of the games that they played were like having a leaping competition where you just stand in one place and then jump, and however far the one person jumped, they would make a mark, and then the next one would have to jump, and then Krishna would jump and Balaram would jump, so they'd have like a long jump competition. Sometimes they would play tug of war. They'd make teams, you know, like pick teams. Okay, two captains, and then each one would pick, and then they'd have their two teams, and then they'd play tug of war. Sometimes they'd have mud fights where they each side would grab up the mud and just throw it at each other. Sometimes they'd do that with fruit. They'd have fruit fights. The boys would throw the fruit at each other. Sometimes they'd be in a joking mood, so like Krishna would look at one of his friends and he'd try to make some funny face to make his friend laugh. And then if he succeeded, then the Gwalbal would try to make some kind of face that would make Krishna laugh. Sometimes they hung a rope from one of the big tree branches and they would make a swing and they'd swing back and forth. Or if they didn't do that, then two of the bigger boys would hold their arms together and then a smaller boy would swing in between and they'd make swings like that. So in this way, they'd pass their day, sometimes playing tag, sometimes playing hide and seek. And the whole summer, the hot, dry summer, which they enjoyed in the cool forest of Vrindavan, grazing the cows, passed in this way. One day, another demon came, Pralambasur. He came in the guise of a Gwalbal, dressed and looking, he made himself look the same size, same age as the other Gwalbals. So his idea was, his desire was to steal away Krishna and Balaram, to just run off with them. So as he joined in the group of boys, Krishna immediately recognized who he was, and he started thinking, okay, how to eliminate this asur? What kind of plan should I make? So they were having some games, and at this time Krishna said, okay, we're going to have a game like this. We make two teams, and then each from either side you pair up. So the one on one team, all the ones on one team, they have to give a ride on their back to all the ones on the other team. And then they would switch like that. So as they were playing this game, this Pralambasur, he ended up with Balaram on his back. So when they were running, and you know, all the boys were going, and there was a certain point beyond which they weren't meant to go, they were supposed to stop, that was the end, and then they would switch. So Pralambasur, he thought, you know, Krishna's too much for me. I'm just going to run off with Balaram. So when all the boys stopped at the finish line, he just kept running into the forest with Balaram on his back. And he kept going and going, and Balaram was thinking, what's going on? But Balaram was so heavy that he couldn't keep going very far. So when he got too tired to run any further with Balaram on his back, he resumed his form, his asur form. So he became huge, like dark, dark skin, red, messy hair going everywhere, red, bloodshot eyes. He had golden kundal and a golden mukut on his head, some bajuband, and he grew. And Balaram was still hanging onto his back. It looked like a big, huge, dark cloud with a streak of lightning in it, because Balaram is very fair-colored and this demon was so dark. And then he just jumped up in the air. So Balaram, for a moment, was confused. That, oh, what's happening? You know, he ran off with me and now he became this scary-looking thing and he flew up in the air. And then Balaram, because Krishna and Balaram, they're not thinking of themselves as Supreme God. They're playing with their friends. But in that moment, Balaram remembered who he was, you can say. And just with one swing of his hand, he knocked that demon back down to the earth, and that demon was done. And Balaram came back to all the boys, and they were all cheering him. And every time Krishna or Balaram would ever kill any demon in this way, all the celestial gods would come and shower their flowers down. You see, the celestial gods like Indra, Vayu, Agni, Kuber, Varun, they know who Krishna is, but in their own way, you can say. They don't enjoy the ras of Krishna's leelas in the way that the gopis do, or the Gwalbals do, or Mother Yashoda or Nanda Baba does. They know that Supreme God is visiting our Brahman. You can say like, New York City has a mayor. So that he's in charge of one city in this whole country. But the president is in charge of the whole country. So if the president visits New York City, certainly the mayor of New York City will provide a proper welcome for him and arrange, have all the formalities. Something like that, Krishna, well, he's the Lord of the whole entire universe. And these devtas, they're part of the celestial administration. The celestial administration, you can say they're given some tasks that they have to look after to help this earth planet, to help this Brahmand go in the way it's supposed to. God gives them a position that you can help out in the celestial government. So they're just workers, you can say. And they themselves are under Maya. Just like we're under Maya, they're under Maya. But they just have more knowledge than we do. And they have a higher state, a higher position than we do. So they know that Supreme God is here. Our Supreme Lord, Shri Krishna, has come. Out of all, just like the president, out of all the cities in America, he chose to come to one city. So the mayor of that city would be excited. In the same way, all the celestial gods and goddesses, they know that Krishna is the Lord of the whole universe, which contains unlimited number of earth planets. And he came to our earth planet. So whenever he would do some great almighty leela, like killing any demon, all the celestial gods would show their appreciation by showering flowers down or singing some stuti, something like that. But they didn't do such things, if Krishna, let's say Krishna and Balaram are playing and they get up and hold their hands, each holding the other's hands, and they lean back. And they start spinning like that. You probably did that as a kid. So that's also a leela. Now for a Sakya Bhav devotee, seeing such a leela is much more charming, much more loving than Balaram killing Pralambasur or Krishna killing Aghasur. That leela of Krishna just playing with his friend is much more exciting to a Sakyabhav devotee or to a Rasik Mahapurush who has actually attained Krishna's divine love. But you can say those celestial gods, they can't enjoy the ras of those leelas. They're not qualified. Just like we're not completely qualified either, I explained to you that according to our surrender to Shri Krishna, we experience some amount of the bliss of those leelas. But since our mind is mayic, we can't receive the whole entire bliss of those leelas. Not until we're God realized. So those celestial gods, they don't realize the greatness of those leelas in the same way that the Gwalbals and the other Rasik Mahapurush of Braj realize. So anyway, after Balaram killed Pralambasur, they again came, showered flowers, praised Shri Krishna, praised Balaram for killing another Asur. Then the boys had some more playtime. So they were playing, the day wasn't done yet. They kept with their childhood games. And they didn't notice that their cows were wandering off farther and farther in search of more and more green grass. By the time they realized, the cows were nowhere in sight. So they started looking for them. But wherever they looked, they couldn't find them. They couldn't find them anywhere. They looked far and wide. They were getting very worried and very disturbed that these cows that our whole community depends on, we 100% depend on these cows for our livelihood, what if we can't find them? So finally, after seeking all over in so many different forests, they found them in a forest of reeds, a thick, deep forest of reeds. And in that forest, the cows were very tired. They had gone so far away, they hadn't found any water. They were very tired and very thirsty. The boys had looked for so long that they were also exhausted and thirsty. So Krishna, seeing the cows, he started calling them by name. He called each one by name. And when each cow heard him, they all came running, mooing, bellowing, hearing that Krishna called my name, because all of those cows were also saints. They were not ordinary cows. Those were God-realized saints. Vallabhacharya ji, he describes that in Braj, there were different kinds of saints. There were saints like the gopis, the Gwalbals, Mother Yashoda, who had human form and enjoyed the ras of Krishna's leelas in their way. Then there were the animals. Animals like the cows, the deer, the birds like the peacocks, the cuckoo birds, the smaller tweety birds. All of these birds and animals were another kind of Mahapurush who enjoyed the leelas and the ras of those leelas in their own way. But they were also saints, God-realized saints, who enjoyed the unlimited bliss of all of Krishna's leelas. Then there were even insects like the bumblebees. They were also saints. Then there were trees, plants, flowers. Those were also great jnanis and yogis. Bhagavatam also tells this, that the plants and flowers and trees, they were not ordinary. There were also saints who had come to serve Sri Krishna. Krishna Upanishad says, Vaikuntham Gokulam Vana Vaikuntham. The saints of the divine world came and populated the area of Braj because they wanted to serve Shri Krishna. They wanted to be there to serve him in any way and to experience the ras of his leelas. So even the plants enjoyed the bliss of Krishna's leelas in their own way. Even great jnanis, great yogis, they were willing to take the form of a static being just to get that ras of Krishna's leelas. So, while Krishna was calling the cows, and those cows, hearing Krishna call their name, they were overwhelmed with Krishna's love. Another time it happened. A fire started up. So the fire started approaching from one side, and then the wind was blowing. See, they're in this forest of reeds, so the reeds would spread the fire very quickly. The wind was blowing very hard as well, helping the fire to spread, and it surrounded them. So all the Gwalbals came running to Krishna. They rushed to him and said, "Please save us." So Shri Krishna answers the cry, answers the call of anyone who surrenders to him wholeheartedly. When any person surrenders to him wholeheartedly, there's no delay from his side. The delay is from our side. See, the way the Gwalbals took shelter in Shri Krishna is different than how we pray if we're asking for any worldly thing or we're asking for help. It's different. You see, when we ask, we have partial faith that Krishna may help us. Let's say someone's asking for money. He may ask for a raise. Give me a raise so that instead of making $50,000 a year, I'm making $60,000 a year. So he asked Shri Krishna for $10,000. But if we really had faith, if we had full faith in Shri Krishna, why ask him for $10,000? Ask him for $10 million. If he's going to give it to you, why not really ask him? It's because we think, well, maybe he will. Maybe he'll. No, if I ask him for 10 million, he might not give it. I'll only ask him for 10,000. The Gwalbals had no such hesitation. Whatever they wanted, they went to Krishna. They said, like the Leela you heard the other day, oh Krishna, those palm dates over there that are guarded by Dhenukasur, we want those. They smell good. They would taste good. Go do something that, you know, get rid of this asur so that we can eat those fruits. They wanted it, they just went and told him. Like a child would tell his father, Daddy, I want this. He has full faith that his father is going to give him. And secondly, they truly feel in their heart related to Krishna. You see, if a stranger comes up to you, like your child can come up to you, right, and ask for anything, and you're willing to give it or do it. You want to see your child happy. But if a total stranger came up to you, you might give a dollar, or you might give $10, not more than that. He might run up to you and ask you for anything. Because you don't feel related to that person, you're very limited in what you're prepared to give. Similarly, we feel attached to all of our family in the world. We feel that we belong to them and they are ours. And our relationship with Krishna is much more distant. We don't think of him as much as we do the people in the world. They are more in our heart than he is. So in a way, he's like a stranger to us compared to the people that we love in the world. So with what feelings are we going to him to ask for help? We don't feel 100% related to him. We don't have 100% faith. So with those kind of feelings, that's not really asking. That's not really surrendering. Ananyash chintayanto mam ye jana paryupasate tesham nityabhiyuktanam yogakshemam vahamyaham. In the Gita, Shri Krishna says he takes the full responsibility to protect what his surrendered devotees have gained, and whatever they haven't gained, to make sure that they do attain that. But there's a condition. He says that you have to be fully surrendered. If you're fully surrendered, I take your full responsibility. So that's our goal, to get to that place where the Gwalbals are, where anytime anything happens, they just trust in Shri Krishna. Now, the Gwalbals are not setting an example of worldly devotion. Worldly devotion meaning that you ask God for worldly things. They're not setting that kind of example. They're just showing that Krishna is theirs. So whatever happens, they want to share it with Krishna. They're with Krishna. They depend on Krishna for everything. But the Gwalbals wouldn't have become Rasik Mahapurush when they were in our position and they were doing devotion, if they had asked Krishna for help, like, oh Krishna, I want this thing, give me this. Or, oh Krishna, don't let this bad thing happen to me. That's not how they did devotion. To become a Rasik Mahapurush, Rasik means who gains entrance to those leelas of Krishna. You have to do selfless devotion. That's Raganuga Bhakti I was referring to yesterday. Raganuga Bhakti means in the same style of loving Krishna, how the Brajvasis loved him. So they didn't love him selfishly. Even when they were devotees like we were, to get to their status, they only loved Krishna for the sake of loving him and with a desire to get the divine vision of his leelas. That's all they wanted. They never asked him for any worldly thing. So we should keep that in mind. But once you are surrendered to Krishna fully, whether you ask him or don't ask him, he's going to do everything for you. Just like a small baby is completely surrendered to his mother, so what doesn't the mother do? Mother does everything. That baby can't roll over or even so much as hold his own head up straight. The mother does everything, feeding him, bathing him, clothing him, putting him to sleep, getting him up. Keeps his whole schedule every minute of the day exactly how what is best for that baby. So the mother has the full responsibility because the baby is fully surrendered to the mother. And as that child grows up and starts doing more and more things for his own self, the mother gradually starts doing fewer and fewer things for her child until the child becomes almost totally independent. Then the mother rarely does something for her child when he's grown. In the same way, we have to reach that same state like a newborn child. A newborn child just completely surrendered to Krishna. So since the Gwalbals were always in this state, they were fully surrendered to Krishna all the time. So he did everything for them. He loved them like his own soul, more than his own soul. So when seeing those Gwalbals frightened by this fire, Krishna told them, "You all sit right here. Sit down and close your eyes." So all the Gwalbals closed their eyes. And then Shri Krishna did the same thing again. He just inhaled that entire fire and it disappeared. And then he told the Gwalbals, "Okay, you can open your eyes." And when they opened their eyes, they were in a completely different place. Now they were in Bhandirvat. So they opened their eyes, looked around. There was no fire. They were just in a beautiful, natural, forested setting. The cows were all there. So then they decided, okay, time to go home. So then they came home, they made their way back. And just like I described yesterday, all the gopis were there having the darshan of Shri Krishna, returning back into the village with all the cows and Gwalbals and Balaram. Every day the gopis used to come out of their homes to have that vision. So in this way, the whole Grishma Ritu passed. After Grishma Ritu comes the rainy season, Varsha Ritu. So in Varsha Ritu, the clouds come over, they become dark, rumbling in the sky, lightning, if not right here, then over there in the distance. It rains almost every day, especially in the afternoon. So then, all over the land, all the creeks swelled, overflowed their banks. The big rivers like Yamuna rose even higher. Every day was raining, so the fields, like they have the Mer in the fields, it's even described in Bhagavatam 5,000 years ago, this description. The same way of farming you see in the fields today with the Mer. You know, the boundary wall they use to keep the water in. In the rainy season, it rains so much that they stop even trying to patch up the mehr. It just keeps flowing. The water keeps going. But it's such a relief. See, where Shri Krishna was, it was like nice and cool Vasant Ritu even throughout the whole summer. But now throughout the whole land, they all got relief. They made it through the hottest part of the summer. Now it was still summer, but it was the wet part of the summer. So now they didn't even have to go far to find nice green grass for their cows. There was green grass everywhere. Green grass and flowers and you know, fresh leaves from the trees just bursting forth everywhere. So all the animals, all the beings, all the people too, they all got a nice relief. Even at night, this is one of the features of the rainy season, that at night you wouldn't see a clear sky. It would be either totally black, or you'll see if the moon is there, you might see the moon shining through the clouds every now and then again it will get covered up. But you won't see like just stars filling the sky. So it has its own charm. It's like a different season. And even at night, you see, you know, here and there, lightning dancing in the sky, and in the distance, you hear thunder rumbling. The peacocks get very excited during the rainy season. So it describes in Bhagavatam that the peacocks would all dance and call out, and they loved the rainy season. So Krishna, he kept going out and grazing the cows with all of his friends, even throughout the rainy season. But they didn't have to go far because there was so much green grass, so they didn't range far and wide. But even so, when they were out, often many days it would start raining. So then if it started raining, Krishna sometimes, you know, in the big trees, there's like a place where it splits and you can sit up in that area. So sometimes to get out of the rain, he would sit up there in like the gold of the tree. Or if there was a big, huge tree that had a hollow trunk, Krishna would go in there and get out of the rain. Or there were so many caves, actually, in the Braj area, so the boys would go and hide in the cave and eat their lunch there. Or if it stopped raining, then they would go out on the bank of Yamuna and sit on big, huge boulders and eat their lunch together. So in this way, they passed the whole rainy season as well, of Krishna's sixth year. And after the rainy season comes Sharad Ritu, the fall season. So in Sharad Ritu, again, the sun becomes hotter. See, in the rainy season, everything, you can say, becomes very muddy. In fact, it describes that they don't really go and travel anywhere during the rainy season. But during Sharad Ritu, again, the sun becomes quite hot, at least during the day. So everything starts drying up. They repair the mird in the fields. The rice is ready to harvest at that time. They see the sun during the day and the beautiful moon at night. The moon kind of feels like it has a cooling effect. Everything, all the mud, the kichad, dries up and they can use the roads again. And all those pathways that weren't used during the rainy season, they got all overgrown with grasses and plants. So now they start making paths through there again. And in this Sharad Ritu, there's a beautiful description in the Bhagavatam of Venu Geet. So the gopis are talking amongst each other. And they're saying that, you know, these eyes, every person has eyes. But in my estimation, the only use of these eyes is to see Krishna when he comes back at the end of the day. And he's coming back and they describe, actually, they're having like bat chit, they're talking amongst each other. And part of that description is the shloka that I sang in my vandana, Baraha Pidam Natavarva Vapuh. So these are the gopis, actually, they started to talk, and when they were talking, their mouth just stopped moving because they got totally absorbed in that vision and that description of Krishna. It describes him that, you know, the cows are going, and then Krishna is behind the cows, playing his flute, walking behind them. Then Balaram, then all the Gwalbals, then describes how is Krishna dressed, that he has the peacock feather and his crown and yellow shawl around his shoulders, pitambar, his dhoti, walking barefoot, looking here and there with like, you can say, animated eyes, you know, looking this side, looking that side, smiling mildly. And in this way, he's making Vrindavan more beautiful, more glowing, more rasamay, more blissful, even than Vaikunth abode. But the gopis think all of this in their mind. They were talking and then they just became totally absorbed and they're all imagining the scene in their mind. So imagine, how are the gopis spending their time when they get together? Yesterday I was telling you how the gopis spent their time during the day when they were working. They only thought of Krishna. They thought of his leelas, they sang his name, they sang songs of his leelas. And in that way, they passed all day, every day, doing all of their household chores, doing all of their duties, always absorbed in thoughts of Krishna. So they were setting the example of Karma Yoga. And now they're together, they must have had some free time, or they were together for some kind of event. So all the gopis are together and they're talking. But what are they talking about? Again, Shri Krishna. That's an example to us. When we get together, what do we talk about? Even when we're in a religious place, normally the conversation is about social things or work or worldly things or politics or sports or whatever happens to be our interest. We have that that inner desire to talk about those things. Meaning like it sounds sweet to us. If someone talks about the topic that we like, that we're interested in, it sounds sweet to our ears and we want to hear more. Some people even like gossip. Well, what did that person do? What did that person say? We want to, tell me more. Tell me more. I want to know. The gopis never wasted a moment in such talks. If they were together and they were talking, it was about Krishna. That's it. He was the only thing in their heart, the only thing on their tongue, the only thing coming out of their voice was Krishna, Krishna, Krishna. So this Venu Geet is once the gopis came out of their absorbed state and they started talking. They were talking amongst each other about the effect of Krishna's flute. They are saying that that flute, who knows what kind of good karma that flute had to do to get this status. That all day, Krishna holds that flute to his adhar, his lower lip. And he just pours his adhar amrit, in the nectar of his adhar, into that flute all day long. So they're saying, the gopis are saying, it looks to us like that flute is just going to drink up all of that and not leave any for us. So who could praise the glory and the greatness of such a flute to get that position with Shri Krishna? And then when Krishna plays on the flute, the effect is amazing. One gopi says, oh yes, I've seen that when Krishna plays on the flute, all the peacocks, they start dancing. They put their tails out and they start dancing and they call. They get so excited. They come close. And another gopi says, yes, yes. And when the deer hear that, they also come running. And they just look at Krishna unblinking. They just look and stare, attracted by the sound of his flute. Another gopi says, you know what I've seen? I've seen those celestial maidens coming in their celestial chariots up in the sky. They come when they hear Krishna's flute and they look down at Krishna and they don't even realize that the sound of the flute, they've become so absorbed that their hair, which is braided, when they braided it, they braided flowers into it. So they become like kind of half unconscious and then the flowers start falling out of their hair onto Shri Krishna or maybe some ornaments or something like that, just like falling down onto the earth. Such is the effect of Krishna's flute. So another gopi says, never mind that, have you seen the effect on the cows? When the cows hear the sound of Krishna's flute, they become completely still. Whatever they were doing, they become totally still, and tears even come from their eyes, but they're unmoving. And then the calves, who were drinking the milk at their mother's udders, they become totally still, listening to the sweet sound of the flute. Like, it's the sound of that flute has stolen their heart. And they had like a mouthful of milk, but they're just standing there like that. They're not swallowing, they're not doing anything, totally still. Another gopi says, "Have you seen the effect on the birds? The birds might be flying around, they hear the sound of Krishna's flute, and they just land on a branch, and they just stay there, like that. And some of them get so absorbed, they might even fall off the branch. Such is the effect of Shri Krishna's Murali." So another gopi says, "You're talking about all living beings. Have you seen the effect on Yamuna? Yamuna, when she hears the sound of Krishna's flute, her waves get higher and higher, and all the lotuses growing along the bank, it looks like through that wave, she's trying to offer up those lotuses to Shri Krishna's feet." So another gopi says, "You're talking about Yamunaji here on the ground, part of our earth. Have you seen the effect on the clouds up in the air? When Shri Krishna plays on his flute, then those clouds get excited and they come closer and they come over and they start rumbling in excitement. And not too much, not like a soaking rain, just a gentle drizzle, just a misty rain, just in their own way, like they want to shower some flowers of rainwater down on Krishna. And then in their excitement, there might be flashes of lightning and that kind of thing." So in this way, the gopis are just talking and expressing their feelings for what is the effect of Krishna's flute. And this is the whole description of Venu Geet in the Bhagavatam. So this is where we'll end today. Tomorrow we'll hear what happened when they were out grazing the cows. And they all got hungry. And Shri Krishna told them, "Oh, there's some Brahmins of Mathura nearby having a yajna, so go and ask them for food." So something very interesting happened when the Gwalbals went and did that. So we'll hear that Leela and some others as well tomorrow. And tomorrow will be the last day for this series.